say you can kill my body, but you know you can't mess with my mind.
Welcome to Economics and Beyond. I'm Rob Johnson, president of the Institute for New Economic Thinking.
Say you can kill my body.
Say you can kill my body.
But you know you can't mess with my mind.
Say, no, you can't kill my mind.
You know we'll go away.
We're gonna go away.
Come back, come back, come back,
come back.
My second time.
This is Rob Johnson, president of the Institute for New Economic Thinking. I'm here today with the three leaders of the Young Scholars Initiative at INET, Jay Pocklington, Heske Van Dornen, and Thomas Voss. The three of them are working together right now with a whole lot of other people to build a YSI rolling plenary that will begin on November 6th and run through November 15th. As you can imagine, in this time of the pandemic, it'll be a rotating, different time zone, worldwide exploration of all of the issues and, most importantly, all of the questions that sit on the horizon in light of the pandemic and the other fault lines that young scholars at INET perceive to be important. Thank you all for joining me. So, Jay, I remember there being a time when we did a conference in Berlin, 2012, and we put an ad in Handelsblatt suggesting that 25 people could write essays about why they'd want to attend something about new economic thinking, and INET would support their travel and lodging costs and allow them to attend. And then Perry Merlin came to me and said, YSI is... That they didn't even have the name yet, but this young group is very enthusiastic. We've had over 700 applications. Many of these essays are excellent. And Perry and I talked. He introduced me to you. You set up something that was in parallel to the conference and at times merged with the conference. But just tell us the story. How did YSI begin? What was the birth experience?
Well, Rob, thanks so much for having us. It's really great to be here on the podcast. Well, the birth experience of the Young Scholars Initiative of YSI is an incredible story. Everybody that was there at the beginning felt it and feels it to this day. The question, just to recap what happened and what you just described, was it was the Berlin Conference of INET, the plenary conference entitled Paradigm Lost, Rethinking Economics and Politics. It was right. There was a contest for allowing for younger participants to join the conference. There were 20 slots that would be flown in from wherever in the world. And the essay question that we had to submit was, what is new economic thinking to you? And there were exactly 563 applications. In my application, I even wrote, I'm already in Berlin. Please just let me in. You don't have to fly me in. I can make my own way. That was the story. And about a week later, I got an email from INET. It was Perry Merling and saying, well, Jay, unfortunately, we can't accept you, but we got so many applications and we really, really hate to reject this many people from coming to the conference. So why don't we set something up in parallel? And it wasn't just me. He contacted a few people that applied from Berlin, and we had about 3.5 weeks to set something up. And the idea was, of course, there was this fantastic lineup, the fantastic INET conference at the Axia Center right next to the Brandenburg Gate. And the idea was then that we'd rent out the top floor of the Adlon Hotel, which was three rooms next to each other called Akademieraum 1, 2, and 3, and do something there. And the idea was simply, let's live stream the conference and take it from that starting point of how we can do that. And so the first step was simply to tell people, everybody that had applied, all the 563 applicants, come to Berlin, there will be something for you. We don't know yet what it is, but make your way, we want you there. And with that and other people that arrived later, there were 300 participants that joined that parallel experience. And so very simply, you already see a blueprint for what YSI is today, which is to use this tremendous intellectual firepower that INET has put forward, but then create new environments and new types of engagement on the sidelines that really make sure that our young scholars connect with each other and with the senior scholars in a intimate and trusted way that allows us to explore and take things further. And that's basically the inception of the Young Scholars Initiative. And we called it actually the Young Scholar, the YSI Commons, because the people in the main conference were called the YSI, the Young Scholars Initiative. And so we still call the entire community YSI Commons today because of this experience. But fast forward, I think the thing we have to consider here is that this tremendous experience that everybody had at in Berlin, the fact that so many people like Yanis Varoufakis, George Soros, Stiglitz, they were coming right into our space and talking to us, and they were excited about the energy we had. We had the blogger Mark Thomas saying, well, I'm going to go over to the Young Scholars and watch the live stream and absorb this beehive that's happening over here. And over these 3 days, these 3.5 days, it really grew on us that there was something special happening in the room. This special energy is still the baseline of this community. Today, we as researchers are all doing very narrow work, are forced to do very narrow work, especially as young scholars. And how do you square that into an ongoing community? And basically, we found out that answer by trying and trying and trying again. And the first couple of years of YSI was a simple exploratory process. And we in YSI are really grateful that INET gave us the time with a very small set of people to try it out and develop a way that finds a new institutional structure. And this is the institutional structure that we started really building in our first YSI plenary 2016 at the Central European University in Budapest, in which we, for the first time, had working groups. For the first time, we connected those working groups in this major plenary conference, and at which conference we also knew and we understood that this community would really keep growing. And we were attracting and keeping people over a long period of time in this process. And 4 years later, and that's today, we are holding our second plenary conference entitled New Economic Questions. And the same spirit is alive. What we have today is, however, a structure, a governance structure that we've built ourselves, that's built with the community, in the community, that really tries to make this accessible for now 14,000 members. From a handful of people, we're 14,000 members. And this is not just a number. This is a really engaged group of people that are incredible in trying themselves out and applying themselves to the problems of the day.
Let me ask you, Thomas, what do you think the purpose of YSI is at this point?
Well, hi, Rob, and thanks for having us. I came onto the team in 2015, so 3 years after that conference that Jay just mentioned in Berlin. And the first thing we did was to say, well, we have this amazing opportunity now because INET is there, and there's definitely a need for something like YSI. And I think the first thing we did was to try to figure out what is the purpose of this. So Jay and I, we basically locked ourselves in a room and we stayed in there for months, not figuratively, but we did had a lot of these discussions about what is the purpose of YSI and how do we get there. And I think the purpose of YSI is to transform the discipline of economics, which is obviously an enormous task, not something that we can do in the 8 years that we've already had, and probably also not something that we will do in the next 8 years. But it's the long-term goal is to create new and better economic thinking. So I think we recognize that the way that economics profession is set up now is not contributing to bettering the state of the world, and it's not allowing for all the ways that young students coming into economics wants to do it. So I think many people that gather around the idea of new economic thinking, they come with an expectation that a lot of problems that they can read about in the newspaper, in the Financial Times, and that they consider economics is economics. But when they then go to their thesis advisor or to their economics professor with these approaches, the professor will say, no, that's not economics at all. In order for it to be economics, you have to do it like in a very specific way. And that discourages people because they think, and I think rightfully so, that what they're doing is economics. They're just not doing it the way the professor wants to do it. So I came from the student movement to transform economics, and we were very insisting on going to the professors and say, change the curriculum. But in YSI, we're trying out a completely different approach. Rather than saying we need to change the curriculum, economics needs to be done in a very specific way, we're opening up a playground, a different way to do economics. So that's why one of the mottos behind YSI is be the change you want to see. We want to create our own university. We want to be a place where we can discuss economics in the way we want to discuss economics, where we can open for different methods, where we can do it any way we'd like. And that's the opening that we're trying to create with the plenaries and with all the activity in YSI.
Let me ask you, Heske. You came onto the team. I don't get a sense that the YSI team is particularly what I'll call dogmatic. I see you guys fanning out, exploring lots of different realms, not having what you might call a policy position or an agenda. But there may be some what you might call a nuclei of ideas or vision that YSI has come to represent. And you have the freshest eyes of the four of us here. I'm curious what your perspective is.
Thank you. Finger right on the pulse when you say it's not dogmatic. There's hardly rules. And we've often captured that in the phrase to say it's a playground of ideas, because all these young scholars out there and around the world that have made their way into the community, they've all come with their own curiosities, their own questions that led them to the discipline in the first place, and that they didn't find clear answers to, or that they didn't find were even discussed really in the classroom or in the textbooks they were reading. So we've really opened it up and allowed all those curiosities to pour into the community. And we let them grow on their own as much as we can. The way in which the community is set up is that all those ideas, they transform themselves into projects that are led by the young scholars who are interested in them. So anybody that joins the community is encouraged to pursue those curiosities with a project of their choice, whether they set up a lecture with a professor that they never thought they could have had access to, or they organize a reading group to finally get some communal support around a topic that they thought they were the only one interested in. So this way, the community is really kind of a bubble in which all these different curiosities come to the surface, and it really does take on many shapes and forms. But there's a collective, commitment to remaining open, to remaining curious. We always emphasize as well that the Young Scholars Initiative is not called Young Scholars Initiative because there's an age cap. And when you turn a certain age, or you get a gray hair, you're no longer allowed. Instead, it's a commitment to remaining open and remaining curious, and second guessing yourself a little bit on the biases that you came in with, right? Depending on the place where you went to school or the country in which you first started engaging with the themes, you're always going to come in with a certain perspective. And there's always going to be something that you can kind of peel away at and look at from a different perspective if you throw yourself into that playground of ideas. So a certain open-mindedness and a willingness to try new things and to face the real the real world challenges, I guess it's a big commonality too, to remain courageous and try to address the real problems. Because it can get it can be tempting to do something at the margins and write papers that might not be that might not be that difficult to write and might be easy to get guidance in writing, but actually don't really express your true interests and don't really address the problems that you see when you look outside your window. So the interest in staying true to that is a big shared item in our community.
So I think one of the big problems that we see in economics is that it's considered to be a method, a way of approaching any problem. And if you just approach it in that way, then it's economics. And in YSI, we would like to overcome that way of seeing economics. So if you go into an economics department, you will start with a macro course, a micro class, a lot of statistics, a lot of math, because that is what is considered economics. But if you come to the YSI community, you will see working groups on sustainability, on the history of economic thought, on inequality. So we are kind of using, we are in the same field, but we're starting from another place. We're starting from the real world problems that we see and that we think economists should have an answer to. So we're starting from topics and not from a method that can be applied to everything. And I think that brings us very naturally to the upcoming plenary that we are in the middle of organizing right now, and which is going to open in a week from now, because the plenary is the next step. Jay already talked about the first YSI conference being called Paradigm Lost, realizing that economics was off course. And the first YSI plenary that happened in Budapest in 2016, we call that Piecing Together a Paradigm. That's where we started the working group structure and individual membership, and we found out what YSI really is. But now the plenary that's going to start is called New Economic Questions. So that is where we're basically trying to set our course by reimagining what it means to be an economist. And we're reimagining that not through a new method or saying like one way of economics is what you should do and another way, not by setting up a paradigm that everyone needs to follow. Instead, we are going to discuss the questions that economists should answer. And those are the questions that we find to be the most personal. Those are the questions of climate change. Those are the questions of global inequality. It can also be smaller and bigger questions, but we need to start with how, what is it that we need economists to focus on? Instead of taking a data set that you already have there and then saying, what can you prove? We need to create that bridge between what is it that economists are doing to what is it that will be the impact down the line of the economic action or the economic knowledge that we're creating.
Thank you, Thomas, for bringing that up. And I think there's a couple coming to Rob's question. What are how do you describe the purpose of YSI? What we're dealing with is the fact that we are no longer able to assume that we've solved the economic problem. We don't know. In 2006, right before the financial crisis, there was this view of the world in the economics profession that we know how to run an economy. We know how, we figured it out. We just have to refine these methods. And it's a technocratic exercise. And this has perpetuated itself into almost an anti-intellectual problem, where really big questions like what is development, taking on the issue of inequality, these things are obviously things that we feel and see, but have not been part of economics or not been fully taken on. And the issue that we all face as young scholars is a wider issue in research, not just in economics, but more widely, that this rabbit hole of becoming a specialist leaves this social structure completely vacant, in which we all have a way to draw from various different places and solve the big first order problems of the day. I think that research in general, not just in economics, but in general, the fact that we have a structure where specialization and the focus, narrow focus on publications, has destroyed this element of where a public discourse can happen within research. The social function of knowledge creation is abandoned. And it is not. And if you ask an economist after the financial crisis, well, why didn't you see this coming? Well, I'm a microeconomist, or I'm a labor economist. I do not deal with this category of problem, and actually nobody does. And that's sort of the issue that we have recognized in YSI, to sort of see this community is subconsciously and consciously recognizing this lack of structure to build a way of starting to attempt to answer these really, really large problems that, of course, can not only be solved within economics or within various traditions in economics, but really require some sort of collective effort and awareness of many more things than the things you're specialized in. And that's what the tagline that I love using in YSI is: we want to be specialists and generalists at the same time. One or the other is not enough, but we need both. Many young scholars from around the world are now bringing their experiences, their particular experiences, into the community. Members from India, members from Africa, members from all over the African continent, members from Latin America, from all over the Latin American continent. Economics is not a natural science. It is a social science. It's not dealing with closed systems that sees every problem in an externality that it cannot solve. It has to be an open system, and we need to allow and give an imagination that this is the problem we're dealing with. And right now, this awareness doesn't necessarily help you in building a career. This is a major problem that we're faced in the young scholars community. By going down this path, by allowing this curiosity to be explored, you are going right against some of the direct advice your professors are giving you.
Ideas do not occur in a vacuum. You can go back to the great curmudgeon from Baltimore, H.L. Mencken, and his article, The Dismal Science, where he essentially says he can't trust economists because they live in the context of a society and a power, and they are mindful of the consequences of what they explore and who they come up against. And so when I started INET, Julian Tett, member of the INET board, works with the Financial Times. I asked her, what did she think? She's a cultural anthropologist. I said, what should be my mission? She said, Rob, study the silences, because the map of the silences will tell you what should be said that's not said and what the contours of power are in society. So how does this fit with YSI? You've got curriculum. You've got a group of people from mid-level undergraduates through postdocs who are in career development. There is a process. There are incentives. There is being ranked. There is the pressures to conform, the pressures to avoid, and what you all do for each other is you provide emotional support, friendship, camaraderie, and you help each other with the courage to become deeper and to go at these problems that are basically now screaming at us, that have been avoided by the economics profession for so long. Go back to the Queen's question, you know, how did you guys miss this financial crisis? And I remember there was a movie all about the crisis, a documentary, and Nouriel Roubini said, well, they just refused to investigate. And he was asked, why? And he said, because if they had investigated, they would have found the culprits, and they didn't want to. Well, I think that you're now 14,000 strong. The issues are screaming. It's going to be your world. When I look at YSI, I'm grateful because I have an 8 and 11-year-old daughters. And I see you people carrying the banner. And through what you learn about what matters, from the courage and the support of each other, and taking on these important questions, is extraordinary.
I think it's necessary to give you a little bit of a politician's answer to this one, because I think all three of us have very strong opinions on some of these things about the role of economists in society, but we also play the role of facilitators of that discussion in the community. And a lot of people in the community have different perspectives on the role of what is the role of economists in society. And we kind of want to keep that open. We want to keep the community open for people having different perspectives, as long as we remind people that this is an important conversation to have. And actually, now that we're getting into the role of economists in society, that is one of the main tracks of the plenary that is coming up, which we haven't discussed very much yet. But the plenary is going to be organized in a way where people can raise questions themselves and comment on the questions from other. Each question is going to be represented in a interactive graph, a 3D interactive graph that you can access via your computer, and it looks like the night sky. So the plenary is happening. That's the beauty of doing something online, which we are forced to because of the pandemic, is that we can do it in a completely different setting. It's not in a classroom. It's happening while you fly around among the stars. The stars are organized into star constellations with lines between them. And each constellation represents thematic areas in economics. And one of them is the role of economists. We have inequalities, globalization, sustainability, but also role of economists. And that is kind of a category where we're going to have these discussions that you're bringing up. And I feel if I now say, well, I also think that economists have messed up in that way or that way, I'm getting too concrete. Instead, I think our job is to facilitate the discussion, to allow people to come in with different perspectives of what should economists do, what is their role in society, but remember to have the discussion. Like, and that is also following up on what Jay said, how we make sure that we go from the step of a specialist economists who know their own little area into having these discussions about what is the role of economists. That's how you connect them.
That's right, Thomas. I think I would add to Rob's point that there is also this effort of just bringing all these people into the conversation, because that in and of itself is not something that happens naturally everywhere. It can be quite easy not to question what the role of an economist is and to kind of cruise along and do quite well in life. And only later wake up and realize maybe it wasn't as fulfilling as it could have been, and you didn't make the impact that you could have made. So I think part of the exercise in Rob's framing earlier also points to sort of the beauty of seeing all these people come together and serve as a support system for one another, because courage can come, you know, just from yourself, from looking inside and realizing that your true interests are worth pursuing. But courage also comes from knowing that there's others around you who support you in that endeavor. Even if they don't agree with your points of view, they support you in that process of going through and finding those ideas and grappling with those challenges. So in that sense, I think you're right. We don't want to settle on one answer or one issue. But we do want to bring all those people into the conversation and into that process.
It's beautiful to listen to all of you, Rob, your comments, Thomas and Heska. I couldn't agree more. I just had to think about something very specific that's, I think, quite unique to YSI, and the fact that we're not trying to be right, but we're trying to ask questions. Allows us to be very good partners with very many different types of people and organizations that could agree or not agree on every single point we're doing. But the fact is, and I think that's part of this process that we're undergoing here is that we try to keep us together and keep us together over a long period of time. We are sharing this planet, this profession, this community forever if we want to stay here. And we don't have choices. And I think a lot of, and Rob, you know this, a lot of senior people, they keep on fighting because they don't agree on something very specific. And then they split off and have this association and that association. And the general problem of the left is that it's so splintered and we cannot find convergence. I think this idea of convergence, of knowing that this is a good baseline of how you would like to be treated and respected and heard, and you do the same for others, is an incredible baseline, irrespective of what the purpose is in transforming economics, but just being a human being and being in a collaborative environment in a world that's otherwise only competitive. These massive problems and how to have a career in doing so and how to change the world requires intimacy. It requires some sort of trust that is very delicate. And I'm really happy to say that we are time and time again able to provide these types of environments. And this is, to make the jump to the conference that we're having right now, is one thing that I was really concerned about. The YSI plenary is, of course, a conference that will have thousands of participants. We have hundreds of sessions and humongous keynote speakers. But the thing that we always have in YSI, the thing that we always manage to do in every other instance, is in danger in this case. And we know this because, and that is basically the social connection, the friendships, the sort of the ways that you get to know somebody socially and meet them time and time again in the community and follow this journey along again. And just to say, we've taken this on as a major project in this conference to not just try to organize sessions that are maybe interesting where you are just consuming and just listening to others speak, but to really engage. It's not just the actual serious sessions we're doing, but it goes into us trying to be playful and have social sessions. And we're going to have a game show. We're going to have story time with Robert Skidelsky about Keynes and the crazy stories of his life and many other sort of fun activities where we're having socials where different people are, different members of the community are cooking for each other and teaching us, bringing their intimate spaces into the community and trying to ensure that that element does not get lost in the massive conference that we're doing at the moment.
Let me just interject a little bit before we go on and talk about the technology and the platform and this conference that's on the horizon. You all know that I tend to see things through the lens of music. And while Heske and Thomas weren't with us yet, the opening of the Berlin conference, I wanted to use a song that would inspire. And what I did know, because I'd studied it, the number one karaoke artist in Berlin was Johnny Cash. And what I also knew was that the band U2 had made their record called Achtung Baby in Berlin. So as we were preparing for the U.S. ambassador to Germany to come in and make his opening remarks at the finance ministry, I played Johnny Cash singing a U2 song called One. And as I was listening to you, Jay, just now, I thought of the final verse, and it reminds me of YSI. It goes, one love, one blood, one life. You got to do what you should. One life with each other, sisters and my brothers. One life, but we're not the same, but we get to carry each other. Carry each other. We are one. I think that you are building that which you might call collective spine, that fortification, that willingness to stand up to the constrictions. One of the things, by the way, I have to say this from the vantage point of INET, we don't always just figure out what to do and then pass it downstream. the whole effort that people like Jim Heckman and George Akerlof, two Nobel laureates, have made, along with Angus Deaton, Drew Fudenberg, Lars Hansen, and others, to examine the constricting role of the incentives related to the peer review journal, was inspired by young scholars and assistant professors acting like they were in a, what you might call, imaginative straitjacket. And we studied the cronyism and we studied the constriction of issue space in part to illuminate for the young scholars what those feelings would be. And that question of the role of an economist providing insight to, as a, how they say, talented and well-trained investigator for the global public good, or are you being asked to conform to a tribal notion of what an economist is, to make what you might call economists a safe brand name for consulting for power? And I think your organization is doing much to break that mold while maintaining rigor and integrity as any I've seen. And I do think you are becoming one. So now let's move from there to talking a little bit about what is someone going to experience when they join this conference?
So we decided to do the YSI plenary for the second time about a year ago now. And we had actually settled on doing it in Budapest again, just like in 2016 with the Central European University. And we were looking very much forward to do that also from a Stand with CEU perspective, because we think that this is a front line of a very important battle right now. And then in March, we were already far ahead with making those plans as the global COVID pandemic hit. And it took us about 2 weeks of readjusting and being a little bit upset about it before we realized that we had to do something. Back then in March, we were like, this is in September. Clearly, the world is not going to be shut down in September. This is going to be a few months, right? And I think it didn't take us long to realize that it was probably a bad idea to make two rigid plans for Budapest in September, and that's when we decided to make an online conference. And at the time, it was, we can do something different. I didn't think, like, already by April or May, the opportunities of how this could be a different way of doing it, where we were not constricted by the traditional way of doing conferences, was creating much more enthusiasm between ourselves and between the YSI community, because we could see that this could happen in a new way and this could actually do something different than what we had originally anticipated. It actually opens up a lot of opportunities for us. So when you get to the YSI plan, we realize that at this point, people are tired of Zoom meetings. So we're not going to have a long series of Zoom meetings. We're going to have some very, very world-class speakers, and it's going to be very interesting, but we're not simply going to sit around looking at a screen while some where people can log in from all over the world while some speaker is going to talk. Instead, we're going to try to collaborate and have to produce something together. That's how we kind of will make sure that we're all engaging, is that we will have discussions, we'll have communication, but it will have a very concrete output. This output is 100 pertinent questions. So as we discussed in the beginning, this is how YSI can set its research course and its agenda. It's also a very delicate moment in time. The YSI conference is going to start 3 days after the American election, and potentially, we don't know now when we're talking how that election is going to go. And we don't know the state of the world when we're starting. But we do know that this is a very important moment and that we cannot wait for the world to settle down before we chart our course and find the most important questions. So when we come together, we'll come together to discuss what are the pertinent moments for this questions for this moment in time, not just falling back on traditional economics questions. We will be trying to figure out what do we need to focus on now as a community. And in order to facilitate that, because we could potentially be hundreds or even thousands of people trying to create a project at the same time, we want to create this list of questions. We have custom built software that will allow us to have these conversations. So each working group, YSI has 21 working groups on diverse topics, will have a ship. And that ship has been designed by the working group already. They will look differently, and they will be able to have Zoom meetings on board their ship and discuss projects. This, each working group has prepared a state of the field report to know coming into the plenary what are the pertinent topics in their field. Then there's going to be a lighthouse representing the YSI community and INET, and a different way of doing economics that can give direction to this ship. But the most important part and the new and innovative part is going to be a night sky where each star represents a question. This night sky is going to follow Newtonian physics so that questions that are similar in terms of thematic area will be drawing closer to each other based on research interests. And as the plenary goes along, all the participants can go in and suggest their own questions, and they can pick the questions that other people or the speakers have selected and display them on their YSI profile. And as they make these choices, as they suggest edits and rephrasings and come up with new suggestions, this night sky is going to evolve. As it is a night sky, it will be organized in constellations where each constellation represents a thematic area, such as sustainability, inequalities, the future of money, democracy and governance, digital economy, innovation. These, whenever we're having these talks, that means that we can actually start Zoom calls in the constellations so that while these things are going on, we can listen to speakers give us input about their perspective on the different constellations, and they can suggest their own questions while we speak.
Heska, can you share with us some of the people that will be, how would I say, leading the conversations or exploring the questions?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So we have an amazing lineup. We're really grateful for so many incredible thinkers to be joining us in this endeavor. And as Thomas explains, they're going to be kind of entering into the conversation with us on which questions are most worthy of our attention moving forward, which questions should we structure our research around. And I would take a long time to list everybody, so I'm just going to drop a few big names here. But some of the people who will be giving these talks include Nobel laureates like George Akerlof and Joseph Stiglitz and Mike Spence. We also have Alicia Barcena. We have Stephanie Blankenberg. We have Jayati Ghosh. We have Mervyn King. We have Bill Lazonik. Maria Mazzucato is joining, as well as Julie Nelson, Michael Sandel. Yanis Varoufakis is joining us, and Martin Wolf from the FT. And I mean, of course, on top of that, we have a terrific set of INET scholars as well. We're really glad to have Rob involved. We also have Tom Ferguson and Ursula Costantini and others. So it's really, I think, going to be an overwhelming amount of valuable inputs from these speakers. And you know, anyone who's interested can find the full list on our website. If I just plug that, it's ysiplenary.org, where you can really get the full lowdown on the program.
And those speakers that Heske is just mentioning now, those are the speakers that will participate in the questions fair. But on top of that, each of the 21 working groups have their own program that also includes a long list of mentors that will be in their specific tracks.
Right. And the beauty of the mentors is also that they are there to kind of help the young scholars along in their career development, in that they obviously have faced some of these issues themselves, and they push the envelope in the field in their own ways, and they've overcome certain hurdles that young scholars feel they are currently facing. So that's also kind of the beauty of these mentors. They come on to give feedback on papers, but also to share a little bit of their story and to encourage everybody in the process moving forward. And I want to emphasize as well that, of course, we've talked a lot about now the history of YSI and the way the community works a little bit and what the community members share. But whoever is listening at the moment, or if you're thinking maybe there's somebody who would be interested in joining, there's always a good time to join. Right, anytime is a good time to join, but now is perfect, because if you come to the plenary, you're going to get the full picture, and you're going to be able to step in at a time where we are actually crafting the agenda moving forward. We are charting our course. We're laying out the questions that we're going to look to be grappling with over the next while. So it's a really good time to come in, and I think many people sense that it's been such a weird year, and all the challenges that we've already had in front of us are sort of coming to a climax. So I would say it's the perfect opportunity to enter into the community and work together on facing those challenges in a way that gives hope rather than makes us feel as though we have to resign ourselves to the situation. I think if we come together for the plenary, we can remind each other that there's a lot of power in ideas, and we can work together to lay those ideas out in a way that we can work with them moving forward. And the real key is join us for the plenary. You'll be able to join in on a working group track, which kind of enables you to traverse this innovative platform with a smaller crew on your working group ship, as Tom has already mentioned. The first opportunity to really start getting into that is actually already next week, with the warm-up week, which is sort of the precursor to the real opening of the plenary. Warm-up week starts on November 2nd, which involves introductions to these working groups. So anybody who's joining new can explore a few different working groups and figure out which one might be the best fit for them to go through the plenary with. And then on November 6th, we really kick it off with a proper opening, and already an incredible set of terrific speakers on that one day. And then we really hit the ground running.
Do you have final thoughts that you want to present to our listeners?
Yeah, I think previously you started out with that point about the dismal science and how economists are playing a role in society that makes it hard for them to trust them. And I do think that there's a reason that people have that perspective. And without getting into whether it's true or false, I understand why both people from outside of the economics profession, but also people that are in the economics profession, have that idea. I think many people associate economists with like a white, old, a gray man in a suit at the World Economic Forum that is basically defending the state of the world despite the fact that we are facing many crises, and maybe even thinking that these economists have contributed to the crisis. And I think it would be easy, and what we're trying to say now, it's easy to join in on that story, but that's not what we want to do in YSI. We don't really want to tell a negative story about economics. We want to tell a new story. We want to tell our own story. We're not here to say what economists are doing wrong or how you should do economics in general. We are just creating another place where we can do economics in another way. We want to create a more diverse society, a more diverse way of thinking about economics, and a place where people can better recognize themselves, a place that is more colorful and where we actually feel that by engaging in these efforts, we are helping to solve the issues that is facing our global society right now.
And I agree completely with what Heske and Thomas just said. And I think I would just like to, at the end, just acknowledge the fact that this is a volunteer community. This is a everything you're seeing, if you just look at the numbers, it's incredible. Over the last couple of years, we've run 250 projects in YSI, almost exclusively volunteer run, only with the support of the community and the structures we're providing. We have in this YSI plenary currently about 120 organizers across 21 working groups, all of them contributing in their own time outside of all their other responsibilities. And many of those responsibilities are heightened and increased in this pandemic. And the mentors that are coming in to support us in developing, you know, a good and coherent program and good agendas for the working groups and supports for each of the working groups. And the incredible effort by the INET team and the INET office, and that includes you, Rob, to basically put us in a position to recognize the challenge that this pandemic, not just at the intellectual front, but also in the very practical front, requires a response. And we don't know what the answers are, but we for sure know that we need to engage with the questions. And the questions are all around us. And let me just extend the invitation to anybody that really wants to think about these issues and be a citizen of this planet, of this world. You're welcome here in YSI. If you're young or not, what's really required is that you're young in spirit, that you want to come in an environment that allows you to explore in a serious yet fun way, that allows you to really apply yourself, learn from others, and share your thoughts and perspectives with others. And this can really be a model for how we envision economics in the future. And for that, I second what Thomas said, we need to do our part to really think and build what we really want ourselves. And that's really the only requirement that we have for young scholars coming in, or anybody that's willing to join, is that get your hands dirty. Don't be too shy. Get to know your fellow young scholars, your fellow travelers. We're in this together over a long period of time, and we want to be friends in 10 and 20 years and help all the new young scholars the way that we're being helped right now by our senior INET community. We want this to be our community of the future, and this should be an open home, an intellectual home, a home full of friendships that really, really can be a foundation for addressing some of these important challenges that we must now address.
Yeah, well, I guess I always try to listen and hear what music comes to my mind. And a couple of days ago, I had the good fortune of having a chat with Abigail Disney, who has a new podcast called All Ears with Abigail Disney that everybody should pay attention to. But we came across the importance of questions. And what came to my mind then, and what I would close with today, is there's a Moody Blues album called A Question of Balance. And the first song in that album is called The Question. And the first couple verses go like this. Why do we never get an answer when we're knocking at the door with 1,000,000,000 questions about hate and death and war? Because when we stop and look around us, there's nothing that we need in a world of persecution that is burning in its greed. Why do we never get an answer when we're knocking at the door? Because the truth is hard to swallow, but that's what the war of love is for. I wish you guys the best. I look forward to participating, and I look forward to seeing you continue to invigorate your community and inspire young people to, as Thomas said, come up with positive answers. Negating things may be part of the diagnosis, But we're in the world of prescribing and enacting remedies. And in my mind, you have the potential to be a tremendous remedy for the ills that plague our societies right now. Thank you all three for being part of this.
And check out more from the Institute for New Economic Thinking at ineteconomics.org.
And I'll tell it and speak it and think it and breathe it. And reflect from the mountains so all souls can see it. And I'll stand on the ocean until I start sinking. But I'll know my song well before I start singing.